Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hi, friends. It's me, Justin Robert Young.
So, want you guys to imagine you're astronauts, right?
Okay. That's all I can do is imagine. Yeah. Middle-class guy like me, I ain't ever going to go to space.
You don't know. We'll see. So you guys are, you're on your little spaceship. You feel the rocket take off, right? And then boom, you're in space. You dock with your space station, not the ISS, but another one.
Okay.
Eek, open up your door, open it up, and you got that new space station smell.
It's the only time that happens. Like that's apparently the moment you get into the ISS, it's the first thing that hits you is the smell that everyone else is acclimated to.
Yeah. But it's different. It's a new one. It's not the ISS.
This is our own space station.
Don't smell like funk. Don't smell like Russians. Don't smell like nothing. Okay. You don't have, American astronaut and their food choices, wafting through the air. Okay.
Yeah.
Go in there. You're in your space station. It's got a little small one, but still it's kind of cool. And you guys are high fiving each other. Like, yeah, we're in our own space station. Right.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing that hits you guys is the fact that like you're like away from everything, Earth is like a couple hundred miles below, but it might as well be, another planet. And you're like, man, this is awesome. Okay. It's kind of cool, right? You got your own, you're kind of like masters your own domain, your little space station there. Right. And you you turn off the microphone maybe from time to time and don't let the mission control hear you guys as you like pretend to be like go rogue and declare this your own, planetoid, whatever.
Oh my God. Sure. That's so what we would do. We would like look at each other, kill the mics and be like, hey bro, like just between you and me, nobody needs to hear it, but we're totally declaring this our own planet. Right. Also let's both decide we saw a UFO, but that we're not going to tell Earth.
Exactly. Right. We're just going to say even if we stop talking to each other, as friends, we can just be like, man, he knows what he saw up there. We were there. Nobody else was. Like, we're just going to keep this mysterious secret.
So here you are in your own, space station, just chilling out. And all of a sudden, we're all kind of like skeptics here. And actually, it's like you're in a big floating craft. It doesn't have to be a big mass, just a big floating spaceship, right? So
yeah,
we're all pretty much skeptics here, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, civilized men of science. Yeah.
All right.
I'm ghosts, an astronaut are they real? As well now in this situation.
All right. I want to imagine a hypothetical. Like right now, you hear a mysterious noise next door, coming from the next room, and nobody else is home. You go check it out, right?
Well, yeah. Like I just assume, and by the way, this is a thing that actually happens because I wake up and my brain tells me, well, all the kids are at school and Bonnie's taking Penny to school and therefore I have the house to myself. And all of a sudden I hear the pitter-patter of little feet. I assume, okay, what's this? Let's investigate. And it turns out to be, one of the kids is still home.
You ever, what's your reaction when it happens late at night?
Well, late at night, everyone's asleep, but it's possible somebody gets up for random
What about
reasons.
When you lived alone?
My same thing, but I'd just grab an object, grab a club.
A little more fear.
Yeah.
All right. So you guys are in your spaceship, orbiting 220 miles up. Just you're in your little sleeping bags.
Yeah.
And you hear knock, knock, knock.
Okay. How clear? Oh, hold on. Justin, did you hear that?
No. Wait, do you mean the ominous knocking?
Yes. Was that you?
Yeah, I heard that. I totally heard that.
Right. Was that you? Because that was not me.
Yeah, I thought, wait, you weren't doing the old, space ghost coast to coast is at the door knock knock trick?
I mean, I've done that, five times before. But this time it wasn't me. And I know I'm the little boy who cried wolf. But that's that was for reals knocking. Hang on. Here, listen, let me hear it again. What I want to determine if I hear it again is if it definitely sounds man-made or maybe it's pipes creaking.
Knock, knock, knock.
All right. Hey, Justin, why don't you go check that out, and I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Who the hell are you, Jacob Marley? You answer the ghost door.
Well, I mean,
Brian, let me explain to you how you're going to go to the bathroom. You're going to be exactly where you are right now and use your diaper.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to stay here and pee my pants.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, what are we going to do? Open it up? Open it like, oh, hi, the space apparition.
Well, maybe there's something on the other side of the window. We can go to the door and see if it's actually banging on the door. Look, this big metal tube is kind of funny. Maybe something's clanking on the other side and it just sounds like it comes from
right.
It
might be space debris or like a set of like bocce balls or something banging around in space. Like, you know, there's just got to be some stuff out there. So let's take a look.
All right. So we head over to the door.
And you look through the window.
Yeah.
All right. You kind of like, leaning close. You gotta put your hands near your eyes.
I'd like to think that the two of us have comically put ourselves cheek to cheek, each one of us shielding one half of our face on each side so that it's framed perfectly to the exterior shot to the camera. And our eyes in synchronicity both look left, both look right, and then both look left again. What do we see?
The vastness of space.
Huh.
Hmm.
Right.
All right. Then I reach over and I poke Justin in the ribs and I go, "Boo! Were you scared? Were you scared? No? No? Okay. Never mind."
It's like, "I got my diaper, fool."
Yeah. No, don't worry. I'll show it to you later. Exactly what your fright was worth.
You'll wake up mid chloroforming with my urine.
So you're like, you lean back. You're like, well, I don't know. You know, it's new spaceship. Sometimes they settle. Right?
Wait, is that a thing?
So I know that's your explanation.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
Because like either there's, you know, the ghost of, you know, somebody lost in space is knocking on the door, or you're just trying to come up with a rationalization. So you're like going back to sleep and you're like, all right, knock, knock, knock.
All right. That definitely.
Hey, man, you know how these space stations are. You know, it's always more trouble than it's worth to buy new. This is just one of those things, I'm sure, that just happened.
Could it be like clusters of space rocks kind of knock, knock, knocking on ISS's door?
Who the hell are you? A scientist? We're just astronauts. Okay. We're simple astronauts. Well,
not ISS.
I know. But it was, we haven't named our ship. Justin, real quick, we got to name our ship.
The Dream Maker.
No, I just like the Dream. Name it after that musician.
So,
I've heard of the Dream.
Yes.
So you guys, eventually, you make it through the night. You make it through the mission. Periodically, you hear the knocking sound, and you're like, all right, that's kind of weird. You called, by the way, you did call Mission Control. They're like, we have no idea. You guys are high.
Ooh.
Admit it.
Well, I mean, like, we're certainly 200 miles up. I'd say we're higher than a kite right now.
Like, let me guess. While you turn out the microphones, you guys secretly decided you're going to secede from planet Earth and create your own little civilization, too? Is that what you're going to do?
Are you guys talking about?
Are there other mics? I don't know. Listen, the two of us are making significant glances at each other right now.
Okay. If anyone else is listening,
just deny till we die.
Talk to you again. Say the word red.
Okay, all right, it's good. It's like, no, we didn't secede. That would be mutiny. And we need your precious supplies, your Earth resources. They are important to us space people.
Well, we're all going to talk about this when you come back down, about your space fever. So, a little freaky, right? Kind of like a little haunted house story in the middle of a spaceship. When China's first astronaut went into space, Yang Liwei said he heard strange noises that left him feeling nervous as he looked out in the vast empty of space, but couldn't see anything out of the ordinary. He's now a major general in the Air Force, said he's heard what sounded like somebody knocking on the body of the spaceship, comparing the noise to that of a hammer hitting an iron bucket. He had, there were all sorts of theories, including aliens, and he said he has never heard the sound again since returning to Earth. And apparently other Chinese astronauts have gone up, have also heard this sound. We still have no explanation for it.
So your friend and mine, Richard Garriott, spaceman extraordinaire, second generation astronaut, creator of the Ultima franchise, we spoke to him about like, hey man, you just want to like look out the window and while the radios are live go, oh my God, I see an alien. Wouldn't that be funny? And, he apparently had the same thought and like just the mere fact that whatever this sound was, I'm sure it was a fine metaphor to say, no, it was about the loudness and rhythm as if somebody was knocking on a door. But the moment that you say, as if a person was knocking on the door, you ascribe agency and you build in a story to it to where it becomes this legend, this ghost story. And apparently when Richard Garriott suggested that, the folks at NASA were like, look, I'm serious. I'm dead serious. A fleck of paint gets in front of the camera. We hear about it for 2 decades. Please, for the love of God, don't do this. Because even after you do that, you're going to come down and you're going to tell everyone it's a joke and nobody's going to believe that it's a joke. Everyone's going to believe you
they
actually saw.
Yeah. They finally got to you, didn't they?
Exactly. Exactly.
I have a friend who loves those videos. Like, what's this? The ISS. I'm like, could be paint. Oh, you think they'd use a kind of paint that would peel off? I'm like, okay, you're right.
Yeah, no. They just rolled down to Builder's Square and got that space-proof paint that that everybody else is using.
It's you know, why is it whizzing by? I don't know, because it's the same velocity yet has its own motion. You know, I don't know physics and. It's you know, frustrating to do that.
So it's over this dude, like, man, aside from it just being this isolating, terrifying place to begin with, like, how do you even process that? Or is it just that you've, like, once you've already gone up into space, which is, like, when you really think about it, this amazing, insane situation, like, have you just given up on the concept of, like, yeah, okay, maybe some space reaver is going to come screaming in here and rip my face off. That's fine. Like, life isn't real anyway.
Well, there's something called the survivorship bias, which is, you know, when bombings were coming to England during World War II, you know, this is the first time it's like the Axis forces were close enough that they were doing these bombing runs. They had to tell the populace, like, hey, bunch of you guys are going to die. Just keep calm, carry on, right? That's where those posters came from. And nobody knew how to deal with it. And then meanwhile, you're sitting there and you hear the air raid sirens, you hear the explosions, and then at the end of it, it's over and you're still standing. And there are people who described this exhilaration, this feeling of immortality, this feeling that they can't possibly be killed. They survived a bombing. I would imagine every time there's a knocking at the door, it's like, well, it's probably not a space ghost, coast to coast. It probably, you know, but I'm still terrified. But after some amount of time, it just has to become, oh, there goes that knocking again. Similar to how when you go to a haunted hotel, people will be like, oh, that's the ghost of Clarence. He just comes and goes. Like, I never understood that. And it's like, how do you have a ghost and believe there's a ghost there and not be constantly terrified? I guess the answer is because the ghost keeps not killing anyone. And at some point, you just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've definitely stayed in, like, friends or family, like, basements or something for, like, trips when I was a kid, and you hear all these kind of sounds, especially going from Florida where there really were no basements, right, and not a whole lot of attics either, to go to houses in the Northeast that, A, have been around a lot longer and have these multi-level kind of structures, and you just realize, like, wow, there's just a lot of sounds, and if I... you know, it wanted to assign relevancy and narrative to the sounds, then that's effectively a ghost story.
Very unsettling no matter what. I am the biggest skeptic during the day, the middle of the night, I hear a noise. out the window.
And you and me both. It's like, I forget who said the quote, but just because I don't believe in ghosts doesn't mean I'm not scared of them. Like that's me to a T.
Totally.
Hell,
like, you know, I love to frighten and make people jump, and I am very, you can get me pretty easily too. So, you know, if you want to find out what our front line of defense is against ghosts and the paranormal and protecting you from malevolent spirits, and you'd like to know that there's some people out there keeping watch for this, we're probably not those guys.
No.
But if you want stories about ghosts in space and goblins, we're your source for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, you can help support this kind of research at patreon.com/weirdthings. That's where we are supported by you. You guys are the weird wind beneath our weird wings. And we are delighted to be able to bring you guys this show every single Sunday, as well as the After Things podcast by way of a exclusive RSS feed that you guys get. Thanks to Weird Things on Patreon, patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah. Hey, and if you want a bit of an uplifting thing, take a look at graftreon.com/creator/weirdthings, and you'll see that we're trending up, up, up. Right before every month, once everyone gets the bill, a lot of people rejigger their accounts. We briefly hit record-breaking territory, over $500 pledge per episode, and we can't thank you guys enough. Let's keep that trend going. Let's recover, and let's keep on moving to new uncharted waters.
And I'm curious. It's like I don't know what the outreach right now is for After Things. I don't know how many people are getting it or listening to it, but I'm sure you guys have probably heard the same thing. Some people are telling us that is their favorite thing that we do.
Yeah, if you guys haven't listened, After Things is where we all speak candidly about what it's like to be an independent creator. We talk real numbers, we give real behind-the-scenes stories, and we answer your questions. And the best part is, when you become a Patreon or patron, you get your very own RSS feed. So you don't have to, you know, oh, it's Wednesday, it's time for one show, or Monday, the other show. It's all of them straight through. It's like a 2.5-hour rock block.
And by the way, I will say that at the end of the last After Things, I made an offer to anybody listening that was listening that late into the episode, and I got like 4 emails about it. I was very impressed by how many people listened to the absolute end of what I thought was a fairly dense After Things. So a big shout out to all the folks who are riding and dying with After Things.
Oh yeah, like I gave away a ton of my How to Make Money on Mars books to people who respond to that. You know, and it's there. We thank you for listening. We appreciate that, gentlemen. I need the help of Bryce here. Bryce, could you do me a favor? And sure. I want you to just switch the camera right now, first to Brian.
Okay.
All right, Brian, just look face forward, straight mm-hmm. ahead. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Notice the kind of the mouth sort of straight. His eyes, they are a little bit beady right now.
I've always had stoner eyes. They look like if you're going to draw me in cartoon format, you would draw a line and then do that Barney Rubble, throw just a big black pupil on him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Justin.
Oh, he's making a silly boy face.
No, that's his normal face. So there's a smile, these eyes that are kind of trying to look sincere, but I'm getting this, you can trust me, a little bit too desperate, okay? Now, Bryce, I'm going to ask, are you on camera?
Yeah, camera? Sure. Hi.
All right, let's look at Bryce.
See, that looks like somebody who shows up on time and reliably produces podcasts and episodes.
Oh, God.
While murdering those camp school, by the way.
While murdering people. You know, the Snapchat killer. Now, of course, trying to look at people's faces and determine if they're criminals or not is wrong, right?
Well, there's no science behind it because we have a tendency to trust ethnicities that are close to our ethnicities. In fact, there are studies. In fact, my pick for this week, I just finished Robert Cialdini's Persuasion, and they did a study where they took random faces and they altered them digitally to look more and less similar to the face of whoever was making snap judgments about them. And sure enough, the closer someone looked like you personally, the more it activated that part of the psyche that says, you know, I need to protect my genetic lineage, and this person looks similar to me and is likely related in some way, so I trust them more.
So we'll be very clear out there, trying to use photographs or things like that to declare criminal types is not scientific.
Correct. No,
that
full
just
stop.
Seems like that just seems like the laziest eugenicist.
So if we had, I don't know, a deep machine learning computer and put in a bunch of photographs into the system, some were of known criminals, some weren't, and the computer was ridiculously accurate, like, I don't know, 89.5% of telling you who had a criminal record and who didn't.
Oh, dear. this is a segment I feel like we shouldn't do. These are waters that are that are deep that we're wading into.
Let me just say that it was all normalized for race, so don't get in a panic right now, okay? All the same ethnicity, okay? So just stop that right there.
Correlation is not causality, question mark?
So it was all the same ethnicity, all of that, okay, apparently from the database, right? So they used the same one to make sure, so it wasn't like looking for some sort of bias. In theory, because, you know, you could say that, you know, you could argue in, you know, in systems in where you have a minority and a majority group, there's going to be the system will be likely stacked against the minority group in many cases, the way justice system works. This happens. Yeah. This is things we need to improve upon and work upon. So it's not that. But I would throw in there, I have my own little funny twist on this. There were some researchers for a psychologist at Cornell University showed that people were actually quite good at distinguishing criminals from non-criminals just by looking at photos of them. Okay, so they started off, they actually did a study where they had just regular people look at photos and say, yeah, sloping criminal brow, I think they're probably criminal, not. And there was actually a higher degree of correlation. Now, I don't know what they controlled for, because like if the photograph is them standing against, you know, a board with their height, you know, you might be inclined to think that, but I think they tried to control for this as much as possible, okay? Some Chinese researchers, Zalin Wu and Zhai Zi Zhang, known as the and just at the Shengjiao Tong, so you know, Wu Zheng Tong, totally not to be confused with anything else, had a machine learning algorithm they used to study the faces of criminals and non-criminals and tested to find out whether the computer could do that. They took ID photos of 1,856 Chinese men between the ages of 18 and 55 with no facial hair. Half of these men were criminals. They then used 90% of these images to train a convolutional neural network, which I guess is a good thing, to recognize the differences, and then tested the neural net on the remaining 10% of the images. So
can I make a suggestion? And this is probably inaccurate, and I'm probably making a lot of stuff up because, you know, I'm only hearing about the study right now. I didn't even read the original study. But it seems to me that if the measure of success of accuracy is whether or not they have a criminal record, I think it's worth noting that that's not the same as them being a criminal. What it means is these people were selected by other humans as being, you know, perceived to have committed a crime. And I do believe, you know, like let's say you had Satan horns and a goatee, and there's this whole class of people, if you're born with Satan horns and a goatee, they're like, oh, you know what they say about kids who are born with Satan horns and a goatee? They're children of the devil, and they're going to be in trouble or whatever. Then if a uniform amount of crimes, of shoplifting, let's say, was throughout all children, the ones who would be statistically more likely to get convicted of it are the ones with devil horns and goatees. So it might be that this is revealing a universal human bias against people with certain physical features, question mark?
I don't know, but I will throw this out there, okay? And obviously this is very dangerous waters we're in too. It's like, what counts as a crime in China? You know, that's a whole nother thing. And there is an extreme, like they are very, very, like, you know, they have regions there, you know, Ungar and others, like, you know, like 20 million people, that'll just take everybody's passport because the wrong ethnicity, you know. Here, I would say we don't know, but we've had a system where we've tried to eliminate as much bias as we can, as you point out, you know, like, well, they're another system which is biased, selected for them. We do know that there is a correlation between genetics and risk-taking. We know that there's risk genes. We know that there is absolutely that. We can look at somebody's genes and we can say more likely to do high-risk sorts of things, more likely to have alcohol addictions, more likely to have stuff. And to say that there's some invisible wall between those genes and genes that control for facial features and stuff like that, I don't know if nature plays that way.
Oh, that's interesting. Because you're right. The fallacy in my argument is that a physical attribute is independent from what the person does. But you're saying physical attributes are just phenotypes that are direct results of the genotypes. And so, yeah. All right. Well, that complicates things.
So the answer is we don't know. You know, it's one of these things you have to. But well, you know, you're
well. Let,
you're,
let, let's
let's actually just try to pull it out 5 degrees, right? And just say the reason why this is so dangerous and controversial is because the idea of making this almost like, you know, deterministic, a Calvin idea that like you are fated to be a criminal. You are a criminal because you look a certain way is a very historically a dangerous and damaging idea, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so it's, yeah, there's the potential for abuse is terrifying to us. And there are certain things we might say like, yes, there may be that, but the potential for abuse is greater than the potential gain. And keep in mind
also the definition of criminal in so many ways. For example, let's say somebody who had genetic markers indicating that they were much more likely to become addicted to opioids or alcohol, and then you teleport them into America in the 20s or 30s during Prohibition era. Then yes, it would be fair to say they are much more likely genetically to become criminals because they are addicted. They fall into addiction things. But likewise, also, you know, let's take Martin Luther King or Gandhi, people who I guess technically were criminals for the crime of speaking out against a corrupt
Gandhi immoral... probably was actually active in some early terrorist actions when he was younger, but
well, but still, I guess that's what I'm saying.
Who hasn't rallied against the British colonialists?
It just seems like I guess it does make sense. You know, some of the same genetic markers that make for a great man or woman who stands up to speaks truth to power. Also, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those same markers belong to criminals, people who decided I am willing to gamble with the fate of my future in order to provide for my family or get ahead in this crazy rat race.
Exactly. And that's what's pointing out the top of it, like the fact that they're using a database, you know, within the Chinese government, which their example of what we consider criminal, that might be highly variable. Well, this is interesting. This is something that is curious, but we can, on one hand, we can say, hey, morally, this is reprehensible. There's a difference between saying like, no, we should not judge people by this versus saying we can't judge people. It's impossible. And that's like, you know, Steven Pinker's book, The Blank Slate, goes into this really detail and says, yeah, we can find a lot of genetic correlations, but you can't judge each indie individual by that. You got to give them the opportunity to. They're an individual can have such potential for being an outlier. You don't want to rule them out.
Did you read The Blank Slate? Was it good?
Loved it.
Okay, well then that'll be next. I was thinking I almost was gonna start rereading Better Angels of Our Nature, which was so good. Is this a newer one or the older one?
The book.
Yeah. Then Better Angels.
Oh, older. Blank Slate came out before.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna add this to the list.
Yeah, no, I am a big, big fan of that. And he goes into dangerous territory that people are uncomfortable with, but his point is like, yeah, like if you find genetic differences, you know, it doesn't mean that, and you may have genes for some things, but they're never expressed in you. And so you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do this precog, pre-crime thing. But what's scary about this situation here is that, you know, the Chinese government right now is on this, putting forth this program to have this rating system for individuals.
Oh, like a social credit system. Like mm-hmm. Basically your credit, your trustworthiness score. Basically, if you watched the new season of Black Mirror, that in real life, where if you have a 5-star rating and you're pleasant to other people and generally well liked, then you get special access to things.
And it's the ultimate form of government control, because it's this idea of, rather than go through the trouble of the expense of trying to put you through some sort of trial or procedures or whatever and do that in mass, is that they can, at the flip of the switch, if you say too many negative things on, you know, whatever public chat system, your score goes down.
Yeah, you know, and
what happens when your score goes down? It's like, well, you want to get a house, a home loan, and they're like, you got a low score, you know, and we don't want to encourage that. You know, you want to get married, and like, yeah, your scores. You want a job. Sorry, you have a low score. How did the score get low? Well, you know, these social factors, and it's very different than a credit card, like credit score. People are like, it's like credit card score. Like, no, those are independent private bodies, and you have so many protections under our law over those things. This is the opposite of that, where some bureaucrat somewhere in the middle of nowhere can just change a number or whatever like that, and there is no recourse, and trying to protest that could cause more problems.
Yeah.
Not to say credit scores don't cause problems. Let me make that very clear. But credit scores, the goal behind that was, how do you allow two complete strangers to determine trustworthiness when it comes to financial transactions? And it's an imperfect system, but in the absence of that system, there's, you know.
Well, it's a heuristic for reputation. Like in the tribe, below Dunbar's number, everybody in the tribe knows whether or not so-and-so keeps his promises. And absent that, it's a third party who says, like, well, look, we don't know if he'll keep this promise, but we do know these are the number of people who he has and has not been able to keep promises with.
Yep. Gentlemen,
hey, whatever happened to that one? What was that one like Yelp for people thing that got everybody all fired?
Man, it got booed off the internet, which means it just is going to be driven underground, and it'll have a different name and do the same thing, and we'll love it, but everyone will publicly decry it.
I don't know.
There was a question on whether or not it was even real, right? Like it got all this insane publicity because it became this flashpoint based on top of this argument. And yet, you know, it was just so crazily, you know, poorly received and stuff.
Well, it's a horrible idea. It is, you know, Yelp overall is a pretty, you know, works pretty well, but we've seen time in and again how when somebody with an agenda can marshal a bunch of people to help them tear down somebody like that, it ends up being, you know, but overall Yelp works well enough. But if you're starting to do that with a person and people and stuff, like, think of how much power you guys have.
Yeah.
Well, think of how much power I could have had if I had written my negative review on Yelp about this terrible avocado toast we got at brunch today.
Oh, go on.
Oh, jeez.
It was underripe. It might as well have been plastic fruit. $20? Knock it off.
And this is who? Oh my God! You went on a tear.
You lost me at brunch.
Brunch, baby. Mm-hmm. For the record, I am a merciful person.
Yeah, I never rail, to my knowledge. Like, if I get some frustrating reaction at a restaurant or anything like that, I never use my social media to, like, check out these jerks or whatever.
No, the only time I ever got, I did flex whatever meager social media nonsense, was I had a dust up with US Air once. And I was like, they caused me to be late for a flight, meaning that they had moved my flight onto another airline and didn't tell me. And then would not refund my money immediately. They, like, apparently US Air, before it got sold to American, didn't have a way, anybody that you could call to discuss these things. It all went through one web form that you had no recourse to double check on, because they just got so many of them, and it's just easier to funnel everything through this Google form than to actually pay somebody to talk to angry people.
Yeah,
we had a scam school shoot. Man, this must have been, what, 2010, I think. We showed up on time or whatever, and then there was somebody who inherited our shoot there who, you know, it's like, look, I'm not going to lie. You know, it's probably a pain in the butt when eight people show up and cameras and lights, and, you know, you just want to have your sleepy shift at the bar and all that stuff. This guy was not having it, and he intimated that, you know, he was like, you know what, I changed my mind, I don't want this to happen, or you know, I'm not cool with this, and then intimated that if we slipped him some cash, it would grease the wheels and he'd be okay with it. And you know, of course, you know, that ain't in the budget. And of course, I flew out to San Francisco for this shoot. We told a bunch of people, there's 13 people standing around. So I may have accurately named the establishment, the address, the name of the guy behind the bar, who I still remember, and suggested that maybe his Yelp score should reflect the service that we got, as we got, in trouble. And that I later felt suitably guilty about it, but not as guilty as he should.
Didn't you hear blowback where it was like you heard through other channels, like, hey, can you please lay off this? Like, you know, that the bar was like feeling the pain on it.
Yeah, and the bartender was threatening legal stuff or whatever. And none of it to me directly, but I guess, you know, it's like, well, Discovery, your representative is blah, blah, blah. How'd you like it if everyone knew Discovery loves to trash local businesses? And then they're like, all right, would you knock it off, Brian? I'm like, okay. So there's that.
You made your point.
Yeah.
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 So what we're trying to say is that Andrew's the only one. Andrew's the only one who actually has a trick.
I'm sure I can't think of an example of that because I'm always fearful of doing that. And I'm always trying to be a good guy to mask, you know, my sociopathic tendencies. I'll rail against like, man, those sour apple Skittles. Don't get me started about those.
Oh, my God. Whatever happened to lime? It was all American. Lime
was perfectly good.
It was all that was right with the world. You had lemon and lime. They were the best flavors.
Yeah. Nope. Sour apple. I'm like, I just need a battery. How'd this get in my mouth? Yeah. So
kind of down with sour apple. I'm not even gonna lie.
It's fine. We can still be friends.
Whatever. Maybe you can be, but I don't know if you're gonna be friends after this episode of Journey Quest.
Oh no! Sing hi, guys. How are you? I was just rebooting my new firmware. hi. How are you?
Give everybody a briefer on where we currently are in the Journey Quest saga.
I said yes to some questionable upgrades, but it was a once in a lifetime opportunity
gleefully said thank you to being operated on and given superpowers by way of a shadowy government or shadowy governmental organization that we know has not only killed people but killed fans of ours.
Yes, but I will. Hopefully, they'll be very useful. And so, at this point, have we been reunited, Justin and I?
No. Well, no, we were, and I, having heard how gleefully you you basically joined the enemy, I went into the transportation center. I got a car and burned out. I said, "See ya, sucker. I'm out of here."
And no, you guys hit the road. Justin went on ahead of you, and you were about to start a conversation on your CB radio.
That's right. That's right. And so I try again. Hey, Justin.
I unscrewed the CB radio.
I throw it out the window. My vehicle as fast as I'm able to pull up alongside him, gesturing madly for it making a roll down the window gesture.
But your arm is ending up really straight, and it's not a very good look.
Okay.
So, Brian, you get covered in a cloud of dust as Justin hauls ass down the highway. All of a sudden, Justin sees a big pile of rocks and concrete and everything else blocking his path. All right. And to the left is just this ravine. And to the right, there's sort of a worn road. So he takes this road, drives the road, goes over a hill. Next thing he knows, he comes into this wide open. He's like, he looks ahead. He's like, this looks like Burning Man. Like, there's tents and metal structures and all sorts of things and people walking around in rags and stuff. And at about that time, his axle breaks. His car comes to a screeching halt in the middle of this Burning Man-like thing, but that's not what it's called, okay? He gets out of it. A couple people come over there kind of covered in rags. Maybe some of them wearing some sort of, like, you know, kind of high fashion, you know, women in sort of leather halter tops and stuff. And, you know, dudes dressed kind of like leather, headgear, all this, maybe some bright colors and all that. And Justin, you're like, where the heck am I? And they tell you, welcome to Diamond Town.
Oh
my God. All right. Well, what's Diamond Town?
Diamond Town? Diamond Town's
can I see? Can I see him from where I am? Or can I?
Not yet, Brian. Okay. Not yet. All right. So you're like, Diamond Town? Diamond Town's where the survivors came, man. Diamond Town is where we came together. We had a dream. We had an idea of how to start civilization anew.
I start coyly hinting around. Well, I mean, that's an interesting name. Why do you call it? Why do you call it Diamond Town?
Well, because of our leader.
Who's who would that leader be?
Oh, our leader is, you know, we call him the Boss Man. We call him, King Awesome. We have a lot of names for him. You know, we wanted to use Master Blaster, but that was already taken. You know, we call him, you know, just the, you know, King Cool, you know, we're always coming up with new names. It's one of the things we like to do. He's like the coolest guy in the world.
So, you gotta go, you know, who is this lucky leader?
Well, they point to this tower. It's like this water tower, but it's been retrofitted with, like, you know, it's got like curtains and sails and like billowing fabric and like other structures on top of, like, well, he lives up there. That's where he lives.
Okay. When did you guys first get here?
Oh, we got here, I don't know, about, 17, maybe 30 diamond days ago. I don't know. It's hard to time. It's just been one nonstop party here.
How'd you guys all know to go there?
We each got our own call, man. You got a lot of questions and stuff, you know, a lot of questions.
I'm just a lonely traveler. Do you guys know anybody that can fix an axle? I'm trying to make my way to Los Angeles.
We got a repair shop. We could probably fix that for you.
Sweet. All right. I go with the person to deal with the repair thing, and then I make an inquiry if I can visit the leader.
Well, first off, so you're talking to, well, the mechanic is like, yeah, I can fix this. It's going to cost you about 500 diamond bucks.
Okay. I seem to be a little light on diamond bucks right now. How might a weary traveler earn 500 diamond bucks?
Well, that's easy. It's the same way every weary traveler earns their money here in the Diamond Dome.
Okay. what's the Diamond Dome?
Diamond Dome's kind of the way we entertain ourselves here. It's sort of like a game show kind of thing. You know, you play a game show, like, I don't know, you might go in there and we put like a greased pig in there and you got to catch the greased pig, you know? You might go in there and we found an old box of Trivial Pursuit and we start asking you some questions.
Huh. Is it? Yeah, so maybe it's trivia. I'm great at trivia. Me and my old pal Brian Brushwood and I, me being Justin Robert Young, I was great playing trivia against him. Maybe I could do that. Again, Brian Brushwood was my friend, and Justin Robert Young's my name.
Well, listen, Jason, I'm glad you have friends. That's great. We've got a lot of friends here. So these men over here and approach two people dressed in leather armor with the restraints, like, they'll process you, take you right through, and you'll go, you know, go make some money and come back here and we'll fix your truck.
Okay.
So two leather daddies handcuff you.
I can't meet the leader in between here and now.
Oh, look at you, big shot. In town, 10 minutes, already want to talk to Commander Cool.
Is that another new name?
Is that what we're calling him now, boss?
He's Commander Cool. Okay. You want to know what? Let's just go ahead and bring me into Diamond Dome. I'm gonna get this over lickety split. Get some diamond bucks on me and get the hell out of Dodge.
All right. So they take you into this big, like, DMV style waiting room, which is weird because it's not actually a room. It's just a bunch of chairs laid out like the DMV in the middle of the desert, with a bunch of dudes dressed in leather standing all around, making sure you don't get up and leave. And you look and you see the Diamond Dome. It's more box-like, but they call it a dome, and, you know, there's that. You can't see what's going on there because there are curtains blocking it, but you hear a lot of cheers. It's nighttime now. There's fires raging and all that, and you just hear the squawk of cheers and hooting and hollering, you know? So you're like, all right. Meanwhile, Mr. Brian Brushwood.
All right, so I'm driving along, and I just assume that Justin's listening.
Walking along, remember, you're in a vehicle.
No, that's right. So real quick, I'm out in the desert all by myself. It seems like it's a good way to kind of test what kind of powers did I get. So it's like I find a cactus, looks about 100 yards away, and I time him, I start counting out loud, and I run towards there as fast as I can. How fast can I run 100 yards?
I mean, you're running it fast. I mean, I'd say you're probably like twice as fast as a regular human.
Yeah, yeah. And then I pump my fist in the air and I jump. How high am I jumping?
You jump over the cactus, which is about 8 feet tall.
Ooh, yeah. And then I shout. Can I shout louder than usual?
Shout really loud.
Yeah!
All right. Bam! Bullet flies past your head.
Oh, okay. I run in the opposite direction from the bullet?
boom, bullet comes from that direction.
Okay, I start digging. How fast can I dig?
You start digging. The next thing you know is you hear footsteps running up behind you, like four or five people.
All right, I look over and I see them. I assume I have some kind of heads-up display. What information does my heads-up display glean for me?
You don't really have a heads-up display. Dude, there's some, but it's in German.
I hold up one finger and I'm like, hold on, guys. And I try to find the menu button or to see help. All right, I say, Adolf, English, please.
It's not working. Nine.
I say, Adolf. God damn it. I gotta go get the upgrades.
And I was like, you have enemies approaching. battle mode.
Okay. All right. Jeez. So I hold my hands up. And real quick, I try to ask him, like, Adolf, are there any weapon systems installed?
Yeah, your fists.
Okay. All right.
So your hands are up, right?
Yep.
They run in, boom, so they start punching the stomach. They've got sticks. They start smacking inside of the head.
How bad does it hurt? Does it hurt like usual, or does it hurt half as bad?
It's annoying.
Okay, good. Okay, but I overact. I sell it. I'm like, oh, God, I'm so weak. Don't do this. I'm just a normal human like you.
They push you to the ground, and they're about to start to tie you up.
Oh, you want me to eat this dirt? I start eating the dirt. I'm like, is that what you want? You like this? And I'm speaking with mouthfuls of sand. I'm like, whoa, you guys are just in charge, aren't you? Blah.
All right. And then you hear maybe somebody mentioned something about a pretty mouth. You're not quite sure.
It was like, you think his mouth's pretty? I punch my own mouth, hopefully bloodying it up and making it less pretty to him.
No, it's not. It's too strong now. Oh, so they're about to tie you up.
Okay. Well, I say
attack him.
Should I? How many are there?
How are you into this? Is this your kink? I'm trying to figure this out here.
He removes his pants and says, "Ooh, I'm such a bad boy. I'm the worst."
I assume when you said there's four or five, I just assumed I can't take them. Okay, look, how many weapons?
I can't take them.
Do they all have weapons?
I just jumped 8 feet. I'm faster than any human, you know. Four or five, you know, scrabbled, you know, skinny.
Hey, man, a lot of it is about waiting for the right moment. But so how many of them are armed? Are they all armed?
They got, like, you see guns and stuff. They got staffs and stuff.
Okay.
I'm a little bit of advice here. Maybe not acting like a wussy might be a good idea.
Okay. Roger that.
Adolf's yelling at you.
Okay. Oh, so he's got... It's like, you are the superior human. Show it.
All of a sudden, like, Brian, like, you start to see static, and Adolf's like, I am taking control.
Oh, my God. So, all right. So, all of a sudden,
the Valkyrie starts to play. You're just coming out of nowhere. They're like, where the hell is this coming from?
I ball my fist, my hands into fists, and I look at them, and I just do, I wide-eyed, like I'm Hulk Hogan. I start trembling my face, and then
Adolf
I just
takes control and does the Heil punch.
Yes, I Heil punch each of their throats as fast as I can.
You start goose stepping all around them, and next thing you know, you're standing over like there are like five dudes at your feet now.
Oh my gosh, I never thought I would be this strong and intense.
I'm this strong. You are weak.
Shushy. It's my body. And so I go through their clothes looking for any identification, and I take I grab at least one rifle if there is one and one handgun.
All right, you do that. You rifle through there, and then you find one of them has Admit One VIP Pass Diamond Dome.
Oh man. Is there a map on there leading me to the Diamond Dome?
There is a map. You see this glow now on the horizon. You see a glow of lights there.
Okay. I start a moderate 40-mile-an-hour jog.
Your voice, Diamond Dome is about to begin.
All right. I start hustling. Hopefully I'm going like 50 miles
free
an hour.
Free shrimp cocktail to all our VIP pass owners.
All right. So once I get close to the Diamond Dome, I kind of examine the people. I'm hoping to get an idea for how I can blend in with the crowd. Are there any distinguishing ways people act or dress here?
I mean, it's Burning Man. You know, they're dressed in all sorts of kind of survivalist sort of fashion for the playa.
All right. So, but you feel like I'd blend in, huh? I'm not.
Yeah. Everybody's dressed all sorts of things. Right? Okay. I mean, other than the fact that you're going 40 miles an hour through a crowd.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm slowing down and I'm just going to walk like the normal folks and I'm just going to kind of walk in. Can I get past
what Ryan is walking a very normal 20 miles an hour. Just a very normal, nobody would notice 20 miles an hour.
And so I present my ticket at the gate and say, I would like to be admitted. This says admit one. So if you'll please just admit me, I can attend the thing we're watching. Can I be admitted? Will you admit me,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, right this way.
Okay.
They lead you down a tunnel, okay? And then you come across this row of seats that's right behind this fence. In the middle of this fence, there's this arena, right? Dirt arena, okay? And there's like right now, you're watching some dude with boxing gloves fight a kangaroo.
Oh my God, this is the best thing ever. This is amazing. So yeah. I ask if popcorn is available.
They're like, yeah, no, we don't have any popcorn. And you know, you're just asking the guy next to him for that. Like, you know, we'll get to that.
Okay.
You know, they're gonna probably throw out some candy or some snacks.
Okay,
in between
good.
Rounds.
Right. No, good. I'm ready. What else are we in for? What else do we get to see tonight?
Dude, that's the beautiful thing about Diamond Dome. We don't know what's gonna come up next. You know, like. You would not believe it. I mean, sometimes, you know, we just had a improv comedy sketch that was really, really good.
Wow. You know? I didn't know that was possible, even in the apocalypse.
Yeah. We had two teams versus each other. And I'm telling you, the Desert Rats were really, really good. It was very that is great. Huge bit they did, you know, about like, you know, having to eat dog food versus cat food and stuff. It was hilarious.
Awesome. Right? Dude, I'm in. Let's bring on the show.
All right, so now the kangaroo lands a punch against this guy, and the guy's out cold, right? And they grab this guy, and they drag him away, right? And they go over there, and they raise the kangaroo's hand up, and the kangaroo's like, great. And he hops up. They're like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, next up, right now, Diamond Dome speed trivia round. And you see Justin Robert Young.
Yeah.
Brought to the center of the ring.
Okay, all right.
Shackles.
Okay, I feel a cold.
I'm just here for the money, I yell out.
I feel a cold chill going down my spine as I wonder, where is this going?
Right? So Justin's there. Justin's ready. Justin's all smiling. And then, Brian, you look off to the side, and that dude who just lost to the kangaroo.
Yep.
You hear, bam! As you see, they put a shotgun to this guy's head and they just blew his brains out.
Oh, I don't think Justin knows the stakes of what he's up to. I kind of wave at Justin.
Bulletproof trivia man right here.
I sort of wave my hands and I try to do a cut it off, you know, like arm across the neck notion. But it's annoying because my right hand goes past and then all the way out to a Nazi salute.
Running out of control on the throat slash.
And then your hand goes straight out, and they go, and we have our next challenger from the VIP row.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I point to my hand, and I'm like, oh, it's got a mind of its own, this one. I didn't, that's not what I meant
but
at all.
But you are, like, literally raising your hand even more, like, oh, no, this is my hand.
Yeah, I'm pointing towards the hand, unfortunately.
Yeah, oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay,
ladies
I realize.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh, no, wait. He's here himself, Commander Cool, Admiral of Awesome, fabulous, fantastic founder of Diamond Dome.
The lights start to go dim. There's a laser show that goes all around you, okay? He's got a new game we're about to play. This platform lowers from above. But the first thing you see is, you know, like the Kiss boots?
Yeah.
Right? You know how tall those boots are?
Yeah, sure.
You see the heel and the base of a Kiss boot. You see more of it and more of it and more of it and more of it. I mean, it's way big. Then you see these glittering diamonds going around like sharp, sharp, like grommets and stuff and studs and stuff. Then this amazing, highly polished leather leggings and stuff. The cod piece is fantastic. You think there are lasers there, but it's not. It's just all the light reflecting across from it.
It's just majestic, yeah.
It's amazing. There is a cape, and it's a cape made of black
feathers, and it spreads out kind of like demon wings in front of you, okay? You know, its arms are outstretched there, and then this gleaming, shiny metal mask, okay? This metal mask.
Children, citizens of Diamond Town, I'm your leader, and I am here to announce the most special round of Diamond Club Diamond Dome ever! Crowd erupts.
You look around, and the whole thing is just, the dome is filled with people, and they're screaming. He's like,
and the game will be
next time in Journey Quest.
Ah! We don't even get the reveal. Oh, jeez.
I don't know. Captain cool. Commander's cool. Admiral awesome.
Maybe wait until you find out what he has in mind in store for you.
I know. Jeez. Everybody's going to be on the subreddit trying to guess who Commander Cool is.
Yeah, by the way, that's diamondclub.reddit.com.
No.
You're making an assumption that it's anybody we even know, you know.
He whips off the mask and is like, I'm Larry.
A crazy assumption. The hooded masked figure who's nobody will give their name that runs Diamond Town. Yeah, I wonder if it's going to be someone we know.
Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Let's do some picks.
Hey, I already gave mine. Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. If you haven't read his book Influence, that book is 30 plus years old and is still as relevant today as it ever was. It's utterly fantastic, and Persuasion is more of the same. It's interesting to get the inside track on how he used some of the techniques that he talked about in Influence and some of the lessons that he learned while writing this book. He figured out that Influence, he figured out that writing for academics is a fundamentally different task than writing for the general public, and that when he was writing at the university, surrounded by the trappings of university, he would be overly precise and pragmatic in his language. And then, you know, he went to a vacation house, so that outlooked a whole bunch of people, and he would find himself, you know, thinking through, like, well, what does this person want to hear? How would I explain it to this specific person? Not in the abstract, like, how do I explain this concept to people, but specifically this one person, what would I say? And it fundamentally changed his language. Lots of really, really good stuff in there.
I watched some behind the scenes, and it reminded me how much I enjoyed it, of The NeverEnding Story. So The NeverEnding Story, now on the iTunes version, has some interesting featurettes, including, you know, the making of, talking to the cast, from some of the cast members from then and talking to them now. So I just went through this thing where I watched Time Bandits, which I picked before and I absolutely, absolutely love, and then decided to, you know, dive into some NeverEnding Story. So NeverEnding Story in the behind the scenes, I think, is really, you know, I highly recommend you check that out if you're looking for something kind of fun to watch this holiday season.
I'm really surprised at how well the NeverEnding Story holds up, right? Considering, you know, it was not a high budget feature at the time, but that story moves. It wastes no time getting to the point. We're like, hey, here's this guy. He's a giant guy made of rocks. Anyway, let's move on. This is a fast running snail.
And I think that's to the credit of Wolfgang Peterson, who is a great director, and this was one of his earlier films, but the amount of thought and energy they put into that, and it's like a perfect story if you're 10. You know, it is really, it's a story that effectively reaches that audience. As an adult, you can watch it too, but if you are 10, that emotion hits you when they're in the swamp with the horse and they talk about trying to shoot that scene and how they train the horses so they could do that, and, you know, just cry. Everybody's crying on the set as they're watching this, you know, because it's just sad, and you're a kid, it's even more emotional, and just all sort of the aspects. The casting on that, I thought, was really, you know, fantastic. And, you know, and then, you know, somebody just points out where the girl turns to, like, the Empress turns to the camera, you know, at the end of it, you know, and, like, it's telling you, you've got to save the place, you know. It's like, you got to save Fantasia. It's like, holy cow, that's emotional.
Yeah.
No, so that was one of my favorites as a youth. Loved NeverEnding Story. I remembered. So on Friday, I went to one of my favorite things to do here in Oakland is to go to this show Hood Slam. It's a local independent wrestling outfit. they're shooting for a project that I was not able to find many details on for the National Geographic Channel was a man by the name of Barry Blaustein. Barry Blaustein is a screenwriter of some note. He wrote both the Nutty Professor movies, but he is probably most well-known within wrestling because he is the director of what I will say definitively is the greatest, not only the greatest wrestling documentary of all time, but one of my favorite documentaries ever. It's called Beyond the Mat. Mm-hmm. Beyond the Mat takes place. It's all shot over, I think, 3 years in the late 90s when wrestling was at its peak with the WWF. And I rewatched it on Saturday after he was there at Hood Slam shooting stuff. And man, is it just great. I mean, like, I will say specifically, if you don't care about wrestling, watch Beyond the Mat. Beyond the Mat will explain to you why so many people find it so fascinating. It's this great warts and all story of what it's like to be at the top of wrestling. And you have people that are including The Rock and Mick Foley, who is, they're still, obviously The Rock is The Rock. Mick Foley's still involved in the modern product. Vince McMahon giving maybe the most uncontrolled access that he has ever given anybody and kind of explaining his business at a point where it was maybe at its hottest. It is just so good. So good. And heartbreaking at times. They go through a whole thing with Jake the Snake Roberts, a person who is a household name for many wrestling fans from the 80s, that at that point was on a very, very, very self-destructive path. And they have, him reuniting with his daughter very briefly. It is crazy, wild, such a well-made documentary and some real, real like human drama and emotion from somebody, Barry Blaustein, that obviously loves what he's watching. And he just happened to do his documentary at maybe the most interesting time in the history of the industry.
It's funny too, because you look at that back of that image, and I love that documentary. You see the image of The Rock circa 1999 when he was still kind of the big, huge heel. I mean, he always still plays the heel like in wrestling, but really there when you knew him as the heel and not – you could see how charismatic he was even then. But today, you know, where he is this universally beloved star, movie star, you know, absolutely, the biggest stars in the world. And you see that guy then and a guy that went into the heel role and owned it. And, you know, just went well beyond that and kind of, you know, as they talk about that, being the difference between a face and being a heel, et cetera. And it's just a really, which is a lot about like understanding stardom in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you really want to do some after the movie research, there is a very, probably the most, maybe the most notable and moving moment is in the movie is where The Rock is facing Mick Foley in this big gigantic match, and I won't spoil exactly how it goes, but let's just say it brings some trauma to his wife and two very young children that are right in the front of the crowd. So when you look at the adorable crying young Noelle Foley, then go ahead and look up her Instagram. Jesus Christ, Noelle Foley grew up.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.